Hello, everyone, and welcome to the most updated and outdated podcast in the world, House of Games. Today, I'm joined by a not-so-special guest at this point, my host, Otto, and myself, Rune. Now, Otto, let's just enter the House of Games and see what it has to offer in this week's of House of Games.
Welcome everyone to this episode of House of Games, and this episode, as you might have guessed from the intro, is gonna be a bit about news, I think. So we're just experimenting a bit with the format and the content that we put out, so I think trying a bit of reading the news and reacting to that, I think, could be interesting for the listeners as well. So I guess let's just jump into it. So the first bit of news is, I sent it to you, Rune. It's a continuation of the Unity drama, I guess. So, something that I really didn't expect is that now, apparently, the CEO of Unity has been, I don't know if he's been fired or just gone voluntarily or what's the case, but he's not the CEO of Unity anymore, as it seems. And I think this is just, as everyone can guess, related to the whole pricing changes of Unity. But I'm not really sure what I feel about this change, because it's easy, I think, to just blame the guy who's the CEO for it. But I don't know, you know, this decision about the pricing, I don't know which... if it's only been the CEO alone that has made this decision, or if it's a decision handed down to him from the majority shareholders of Unity, then he just has to do it, and then he has to take all of the blame for it. So I'm not really sure how I feel about it.
Well, my conspiracy theory brain goes all in when I see this news for the first time. I didn't know this, so for the listeners, I've been living more offline than usual for the past 2 weeks. I found out this morning that there's a war in Israel. So I think that's, I'm 5 or 4 days late to that news story.
Yeah, so this is the October 12th that we're recording this.
That was a shocker. And now I read this, which you just sent me, and immediately my brain goes into this conspiracy theory mindset where I think that this was all a setup. He said, I want them quit. Or Unity or the shareholders said, we want more profits. Someone has to take the blame. And he said, okay, I will do these bullshit changes. Everyone will get upset and I will quit afterwards to make it look like we are, Unity is the good guy and I am the bad guy, but I will quit. But of course, I want loads of money before I will do this if I get loads of money. So then the shareholders said, yes. Unity said, okay, let's do that. We will make these bullshit rules. Everyone gets upset. You will look like the bad guy. And then we will try to change it. And then you quit. And then everyone thinks that we are good guys again. Now, of course, conspiracy theories are based on when you have the facts. You look back in time and you have the facts. And you sort of make a conspiracy theory based on that. So it's easy to you know, sort of look at it from that point of view. But yeah, I can't help it. I think maybe it was they knew this all along, and it's not that he's being fired. It's not that he quit because of the bad news. It was planned all along, and now there will be some hope for Unity and like the next leader, for example. And then at the same time, they got these new pricing models and all that stuff that, as we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago. You know, we were all really upset first, and then we were happier about it. And now the bad guy leaves, so we're even happier. And then they will sort of regain their trust somehow, and there you have it. That's just my gut reaction from just, you know, learning about this on the spot.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's, to me, I feel it's a bit, I think people give like Unity too much credit for like this whole conspiracy to raise the prices and get away with it. That I think that, sure, it could be that they planned this all along and like the CEO like planned to, you know, retire anyhow and then he could just take the fall for this thing. But I think that at least some of this plan, if there is one, did not go as expected, because a lot of studios have just permanently abandoned Unity, even though Unity have now like backtracked a lot of this stuff and then like the pricing stuff and also fired or having the CEO let go. I think sometimes, I mean, to me at least, it feels like people conflict like causality with, what is it? Is it like connections with causality? Like, sure, they happened together, like the whole pricing things, he quitting as CEO, but was one like really caused by the other? Like, how do we even know if this was the plan? So I think probably my interpretation of this is just Unity did really a bad job of everything, and now they're just like putting out fires rather than following a set plan, I think.
Well, my counter argument to that is CD Projekt Red. When Cyberpunk 2077 came out, it was a disaster. And I made like a 1 minute podcast every day on my Twitter channel for an Easter egg in Red Colony. It was stupid, but whatever. And I said in that episode, people will forget about this. It's just being so, we're just so dramatic about everything. And a year from now or 2 years from now, everything will be forgotten and CD Projekt Red will be loved by everyone. And lo and fucking behold, now everyone loves CD Projekt Red. We love Cyberpunk. We have forgotten about all the bad stuff. Or we will always sort of point it out. Like, well, you know, it was bullshit the way to handle it, but God damn it, this game is good now. So in the end of the game, in the end of the day, it was all fine, even though they knew they were putting out a bullshit product that was broken. And also, they don't care because they still made loads of money. There was a couple of weeks ago, they updated how many copies sold and all that. It's just crazy. So I wonder if this is one of those sort of goldfish situations where we bitch and whine about this stuff and we will forget about it in, I don't know, 6 months from now. And I still think, even if they did some missteps that maybe was not planned, I still think that their main target was to take profits from mobile phone game companies with this nickel and diming schemes. You know, they said from the get-go, this will only affect 10% of the games, which are like, or something like that. Like, the mobile, you know what I mean. Like, it's not going to affect the small indie developers, yada, yada, yada. But I also think that a lot of the small indie devs, for example, I bought a Unity asset pack for my game to make Shadows. I haven't really made it work, so maybe it won't be in the game. But anyway, that developer who made that asset pack, so in his Discord, he was like, well, this will be my last update because Unity is bullshit. And yet he made more updates because it was sort of like the emotions made him protest. The same with me, you know, I'm not perfect. I told you, and I said that last episode, how I donated money to Godot. And I was also sort of planning, well, even though the wake-up call I got is still the same, that I would rather move over to an open source thing. But it's not like I'm going to bring Sunset Moon over to anything anytime soon, at least, because it's you know, I'm embedded in Unity at this point. But anyway, that developer sort of were very emotional about it, like most of us were. And then he calmed down and now he seems to keep working on it anyway, because some time leaks all scars. That was very Swedish. But anyway, I think that it might be one of those situations where we will forget about this in a year from now, and they will still come out on top because they were targeting these mobile companies that make so much money, and they realize that they could take a profit from them, and that's what they're trying to do, and I think that's what they will do, and I think that the average schmuck like me will forget about this. I have almost already forgot about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I'm not sure I buy into the whole conspiracy, but I think absolutely I agree with that probably it feels like, at least, like the management at Unity, whoever made this decision, whether it was a single person or a group of people, that there's just probably some sort of detachment from the actual customer base that they have. I once worked at a company, I will not say which one, but I worked at a company that had like as a strategy that they regularly did, you sort of did like low prices to get a lot of customers, and then eventually after maybe a year or two or three or something like that, they did regular price increases for all of those customers that have been with the company for 2-3 years. And they calculated that, sure, people are gonna call in and they're gonna be upset and they're gonna, you know, cancel their subscriptions and stuff, but that's only gonna be this amount, this percent. So the amount of, like, I don't know what the figures were, but say that 70% doesn't like even realize it or doesn't care or just keep their subscription, then, you know, we will make a profit from this. So then doing that continuously, then we will make a lot more profit than if we would just have the same price continuously for everyone. And I think that's, I guess, you know, that's not how maybe I would run a business. I think that I would rather want to have, like, rather have just an expensive price and just keep it static, but then have more loyal customers because your experience is a more premium experience rather than trying to be the cheapest and then raising the prices as people go. But I think it's probably something like that with Unity that, sure, maybe they've lost a lot of customers, but in the end, they probably or possibly will profit from it, and people will, as you say, forget about it in a year's time. But on the other hand, I do think that, like, for the future of Godot and stuff, this is gonna be still a lot. Like, this is still gonna be a historic change for Godot, even though it's not gonna be the same effect for Unity, I think. So in that regard, I think we're moving to better times, at least.
Yeah. No, I think that's, like I said last time, I love this open source culture. I think it comes with some bad stuff too, as I mentioned about Twitter or X. Or that's not necessarily open source problem. It's more like free speech problem, the naughty parts of about free speech, but the open source stuff I am a big fan of, and I tried to say it last week and I still don't know really how to say it, but it's just like truth. It's just like, this is truth, and I think that's truth equals what is right, and or from a Star Wars term, the actually, I don't know Star Wars, but the bright side, not the dark side. The other guys, they will win. So I think the good guys will always win in the end. And I think that open source is sort of equals the good side. And I'm a big fan of it. And like I said, I am definitely gonna move over to open source after Sunset Moon is out. Possibly while I'm developing it, if the dialogue system I'm using will get Godot support, because that's a very central to my game. So I'm sort of stuck on Unity because of that.
Well, I do, without revealing too much, I do have some sort of threads going where there's some like developers of assets for Unity that's kind of powerful, I think, that's gonna really make a change for that as a game engine and make it a whole lot better and be taken more seriously. So coming up in future episodes, I think. There's going to be some interesting stuff down the line.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. But moving on from Unity, there's a similar bit of news from Unreal Engine, actually, in, you know, the category of price increases. So I sent you the link, Rune, in the chat, and it seems like Unreal is changing the policy for its users that are not developing games. So I imagine people who are making like TV series or software or movies and stuff in Unreal, that they will be charged for using it, because I think it's been free up until this point. So I guess that's also not gonna affect a lot of people when it comes to developing games, or none of them, as I understand it, but it feels like there's just either it's the same story with Unreal, that it's just losing money and it's time to start recouping from every direction you can, or it's some sort of like they've seen that maybe Unity is able to survive this price increase, so they might as well just do the same at the same time, so maybe it will be overshadowed by Unity's stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's where my headspace went to straight away, that this is Unity survived all that backlash and now they can do it too. It feels like, you know, that's what I think. And I don't know, why not? I mean, everything is increasing in prices, so why not go from free to subscription-based? And I was just thinking, like, one positive thing about this is that maybe people who develop games will be more serious about what they're developing. And I think, like, when you have free stuff and everything is free and you have asset storage free stuff, you get all this shovelware and all that stuff, I'm thinking somewhere that maybe by paying stuff, people become more serious about what they're making, and maybe in the end of the day, that will result in better games for everyone.
Yeah.
But I'm not... Yeah. But at the same time, I do think that a lot of the shit games that are out there, it's either these acid flip shovelware games or these extremely microtransaction bullshit games. So those games will probably not go away anyway because they make so much money, I suppose. But hopefully, fingers crossed, that this leads to better games, like when you actually have to put some money and effort into it. At least that's how I feel. Like I feel like when I pay for stuff, it becomes more serious, like my gym membership. It's so expensive, like I would feel sick if I didn't go because I pay so much for it. So, yeah. So that's why I go.
Well, it's sort of a, you get what you pay for, I guess.
Mm.
And it's the same with this. And I think it's something that's really interesting with Unreal Engine in comparison to Unity is at least that Unreal Engine seems to be at least focused on one thing, and that's creating the best game engine that they can. Unity feels like they're so all over the place that, you know, there's the game engine, but that feels almost, I mean, when I used to use it maybe a year ago now, but it felt like the game engine is this abandoned thing that a portion of the company works on, and then there's like the rest of the company, which is a lot of people who are working with like making movies with Unity, and they're just doing like a bunch of other stuff that's not like the actual editor for making games, which is supposed to be like the core thing about the company. But you know, there's just, when I heard about, like, I think it was previously this year, they did some layoffs as well from within Unity, or if it was some earlier, we're getting to one of those news items, but there's just like the numbers that they said, like there was, like, they have thousands of people working in like research and development. And usually research and development is not something that you can cash in on straight away. It's like stuff that maybe in 5 years' time you can, you know, build something that you can charge money for. But it feels like sort of this IT bubble phenomena where you have investors that are willing to wait a lot of years to gain something from it, but then you also sort of lose like the immediate value that you would get from just making the editor better or just focusing on the core thing like it looks like Unreal is doing in contrast to Unity.
Interesting, yeah. Makes me think about, I think I read somewhere at some point, like why, for example, Sony and Samsung TVs are so expensive. It's because they are actually developing the tech. And then you have these sort of LCT or Sharp or whatever, they sort of swoop in afterwards and use that tech that has already been developed. So Samsung or PlayStation, Sony, I mean, they need to recoup the costs because they have, like you said, their research team and all that stuff that developed the stuff by selling expensive TVs. And, you know, they can use fingers crossed that they have loyal customers that want to buy these TVs over and over again and at an expensive price, because many times you can get just as a good TV for almost half the price. So, yeah. But I'm thinking, you said the IT bubble. It made me think about, like, if we could look into the future, where what was going to happen in the future then if these companies can't stay afloat? Would that...
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the really good things, in my opinion at least, about capitalism, is this creative destruction, as it's called. So, under a system where they are dependent on people voluntarily paying them money to create an editor, for example, or whatever it might be, at the end of the day, if they are not creating enough value and being enough profitable to be able to continue, they will either be bought up or be bankrupt or just cease to be or whatever it might be. And that's the case with Unity as well. I mean, sure, it has these drawbacks to where people or companies have to increase prices to be able to make the Unity editor, for example, but it also sets them straight that they can't just do research and development forever. If they would just have put all of that effort to making the absolute best editor possible and outcompeting Unreal, then I think this would be a lot less... I mean, it would be more understandable that it would raise the price, because this would be like having the Rolls Royce of game engines. But I think Unity has always lagged behind Unreal Engine and just not been like the same, at least visually, the same quality as Unreal. So, you know, having like price increases without having like an equivalent value added to it, I think it's just, I don't know where I was going with this, but at least I think I'm glad that in the long term, as you say as well, I think we'll probably see a healthier game engine market as people are realizing that open source is good too, and the game engines themselves, Unity, Unreal, will probably realize that they can't just do whatever. They really have to create value for game developers or they're going to be bankrupt.
Yeah, one thing I mentioned in some previous episodes is about Unreal. You can Google like upcoming 10 games in Unreal Engine and they all look exactly the fucking same. Like everything about them. And it's just that sort of Unreal touch that of course looks beautiful, but I used to worry that when you have too much of that, it's not going to look special anymore. So the sweet thing with having two different engines, but I to be fair, I do think that a lot of Unity games, especially when they're developed in 3D, they also have like a certain touch to it that makes it feel Unity. And I hope that if we move towards a open source game developer engine future, that that will also mean that these open source engines will sort of support different styles, if that makes sense. Because it's almost like you can see as soon as the game is made in Unity or in Unreal, because it just has that meh style, except that especially Unreal looks amazing. But I can imagine that we will get sick of it eventually and we want to see something different. So I hope that's what the open source future holds, the different styles and so on. And I have no idea where that style comes from or if that's even a thing, but that's just a feeling.
Yeah, but I feel the same. Like all hard surfaces in Unreal games to me are like super shiny, for example. That's like one of the things that I always recognize with Unreal games, that they're so, like if you have a metal surface or something, they're super shiny and reflective. And I mean, it's impressive to see that, but it's, as you say, it has the sort of Unreal flavor that you can see quite from far that it's made in that engine.
One thing I noticed, I haven't played Death Stranding yet, but the Metal Gear Solid games and Death Stranding look very similar too. Obviously, it's the same sort of developer, Hideo Kojima, and his main guys moved over and made it. But it's just also something about, it also looks very alike, which is weird because it's different engines. So I don't know if it's just about the way they design it, but those games, I think, the designers for Metal Gear Solid and Death Stranding, they make the character look like, almost like action figures in a game or something. They look kind of plasticky-ish. But I think it looks cool. I really like it. But it's just, I was just thinking about that now, that I don't know, maybe it does. Well, surely the game engine must have something to do with it, but also the designers and how they implement it to their games. Because, yeah, those are not the same engines, Death Stranding and the Metal Gear Solid games, but I think they look very alike in terms of at least the characters.
Well, I think it's sort of the same with, I don't remember where I heard this, but there's some theory about why things are made from the things they are. So, for example, related to economics, I think. So, for example, why don't we have like cutlery, like forks and knives out of gold? And why is that made of like iron? And why is like chairs made of wood and so on? And for the absolute most part of them, it's because like of how expensive or cheap it is to produce, and like the properties of the material itself. We use gold store value because it sort of never degrades because it's very non-reactive and so on. And I think it's the same with game engines, that, as you say, I mean, I haven't played the Death Stranding or the Metal Gear Solid games.
Oh.
But I think it's the same, that the feature set that you have with an engine probably dictates more than you think about how you make the game. I mean, imagine that you would have, if you just have a thought experiment, that imagine that you could make games in the Stone Age and maybe 5,000 years ago. And then the game engines, if you imagine that the technology would be the same, but like those people would make the game engine instead of us now. And I think the culture sort of makes it different. I mean, when you're making a game engine, I think you have some expectations of what the game developer wants to make. And then you make the feature set according to that. And then when you do make the game, the toolbox has a set number of things you can make with it. And I think it's the same with when you compare like Unreal games to each other and unit games to each other, and the whole toolbox sort of restricts what you can do, and therefore they look kind of similar. And I think some feature, I guess, or some look or something, you know, you can't make everything in every engine, so you're gonna just adapt to what's possible to make within a certain time frame and so on. So
yeah, and also, like, I don't know if I mentioned it when we interviewed the developer from Orten, was the case.
No, yeah.
What was his name?
Oscar, I think.
Yes. Oscar, yeah. So I don't know if I said it on the episode, but a part of me thought that he used Unity.
Yeah, that's correct.
The water in the sewers, I was thinking, I think I have the exact same. I think we have been watching the exact same tutorial too.
Yeah, I guess that's got to be like the same thing that, you know, the tutorial ecosystem also sort of dictates what you're going to make and how you're going to make it, even though it's possible to make in a huge number of ways. Maybe everyone does like according to this tutorial.
Mm. It looks amazing though. But this other sort of weather asset pack, the one I mentioned before about the developers who said he's going to stop updating it and working on it. In the Discord, I can see other people working on their games. So they sort of upload the screenshots of their games and they ask him questions, for example, like, hey, I get an error here. Why is that? And then he tried to help us out and so on. But it's just fun to see others using literally the same stuff that I'm using in my game. Now, he, of course, say that you should make your own assets. And I totally agree with that. I use his assets as like a base, and then I try to make them mine look different, because I don't like, even though, you know, it's not an asset flip, I suppose, it's when you buy it from someone, but at the same time you want to customize it to make it look unique, but some stuff you just can't, or it wouldn't make sense to customize if the water looks perfect, then why would you screw it up, for example? But yeah.
Well, we have two more news items, actually, that I think we can bring up as well. So, related to Unreal, by the way, so they have done some layoffs as well. So, I think this was on, let's see, September 28th, so fairly recently at the time of recording. At least that they are laying off 16% of their workforce, which is about 830 workers, which is a lot of people. I mean, I'm not sure I know myself how many people it takes to make a game engine, but imagine that 16% of your company is like 830 people. Feels like you could, I mean, with the right focus, you could get so much done. So I'm curious what all of these people, like, do at their job. I mean, it's got to be at some point, I think, that companies get so big that not everyone of them is, like, related either indirectly or directly to making money for the company. It's sort of feels like you sort of, when you become big enough, you sort of lose focus sometimes. Or it's gonna be really easy to lose focus. I mean, it's similar with Twitter, or X as it's now called. I think, wasn't it that Elon Musk like fired 75% or something of the company? And as far as I know, I've heard like this website have stayed up and advertisers have been able to advertise and people have been able to use it without these like 75% of people. So I wonder what the hell are they doing? I mean, yeah, wouldn't it be better to just have as few people working on it as possible and just have that as a strong core team instead of just having so many people that you don't even know what, like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
I have some theories about this, and it's basically comes from moving back to Sweden a couple of years ago, when I see work ethics and how slow and lazy everything is. I think when you become comfortable, you, let me see, I haven't really thought this through, but when I worked at this facility in Sweden where we helped mentally sick people, I told my boss, like, man, this is so laid back. I mean, we could literally fire half of us and it would be fine. And she said, yes, I know, but when shit happens, it all happens at once. And she was right about that. When something goes down, everything happens at once. It's kind of like life, you know, when life is going too well, sometimes you just wait for some to shit hit the fan, like, oh, I'm too happy. Everything's running too well right now. And then you're just waiting for the bad news. And it was like when you work with people, you basically, that's it. Like, that's life. You work with people's lives. And when something goes wrong, everything goes wrong at the same time. And that's when you want to have more staff working on being there to help you out. But most of the time, I felt like, man, we are so overstaffed. It's unbelievable. But, you know, best job I ever had. Loved it. That being said, I think I also worked in a factory in Sweden, and that's when I decided to start my own company, because I got so fed up with when we had less things to do, we would have to clean the factory, because, you know, you had to do something, right? So then people would sort of on purpose work slowly so they wouldn't have to clean the factory, and that pissed me off so much. And I worked so hard and so fast, and like it was so, like, all in, like, I had this Tokyo spirit, like, just work, and then all you get is a pat on your back, good job, and I don't get a raise, I don't get a better salary, nothing. I was so angry, and I'm like, fuck this, I'm gonna start my own company, because then I get rewarded for working more. But a part of me wonder if those two experiences combined, I can imagine that in these companies, that when you work for somewhere for a very long time, you become very comfortable, and comfortable means equals laziness. So it's sort of like I always rant about Sweden. We have 4 or 5 weeks paid holidays, like, and people want more. And it's like, oh, why the fuck do you want more? We have so many paid weeks holiday. In the rest of the world, you have nothing. So why would you want more? And that, because you're used to it. You're used to that many weeks of paid holiday, and now you want more because it's not enough for some fucking reason. While in other countries, they don't have a single day and they're fine. So it's like when you keep giving people shit and they become comfortable, that's going to be the new standard. And then they need more to be satisfied or to be able to keep up with work. And I can imagine that that's how it is at these tech companies. They started small, they worked their asses off, and then they became bigger and then more comfortable. They hire more people. So now we hired Odo. So now I have to work less because you can share my work. And then the both of us eventually become lazy together. So we need a third person to keep up with all the work. And it's just keep on going and going and going and going. That's how I imagine it being. But, and it's just based on the idea how it is in Sweden with holidays and that. You still want more in Sweden. I can't fucking believe it. But I can imagine it's something like that. People can become comfortable and then that turns into laziness or just, I don't know, like, if you're not scared of losing your job or not scared of anything, like, you just don't take it seriously enough. And then more work comes in and then you hire more people because the people that are already there, they're not working as hard as they used to. So that's my theory. And then now when the economy around the world is crashing, it's just like, no, we're going to clean up now. And the people who are staying there at this point, maybe for them, it's kind of like a wake up call. Like, oh, holy shit. Now I don't want to be the next one getting fired. So I have to work harder. So that is just a theory, but that's what I think.
That anecdote from the factory sort of reminded me about something I heard from a sort of famous software tester called James Bach. I think he's pronounced that way. But he described it as, like, in the same way that you have the example that you described, that you have also sort of when people do it in the wrong way, you sort of get an economy of bugs between testers and programmers, where bugs are sort of a good thing, even though they should be a bad thing, in that developers really, instead of like taking full ownership of their code, they just rush out and write something that sort of works and then it's full of bugs, because then they will have so met their goal of having like written something fast, and then they send it over to the QA department and they get happy because then they can say that, look, we found all of these bugs that has to be corrected. And then the cycle sort of continues, that developers make a lot of bugs and QA tester find a lot of bugs, and both are happy with it. But the optimal case would be instead that like programmers try to make zero bugs and take like full ownership of their code and try to not have any errors shown, and the QA testers then wouldn't be blamed for not finding a lot of bugs, but rather just would do their best and find what they find, I guess. And that's sort of the same, I think, with that sometimes people just get stuck in a weird loop of like really weird behavior, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's the same, I think, almost, or not. I mean, with these like research and development things, I guess it's not unnecessary with research. It's really important for the human race. But still, though, I think a lot of companies just get sort of high on their own supply, that they get stuck in this loop of, oh, we're changing the world, instead of just remembering where they came from, I guess. Speaking of which, there's this, I think, can see if we can fit in another news item or not, but like this news. So in total in 2023, at the time of recording, there's about 6,000 jobs that have disappeared from the games industry.
Ooh.
So far. So
who's the culprit?
So according to this news item, by the way, all of these will be in the description so you can read for yourself, but the highest one is from, let's see, Embracer Group, I guess, have done 7 layoffs. So that's 7 separate layoffs. And then Electronic Arts have 6 layoffs, and then Take-Two Interactive. Feels familiar here, but I can't remember which games they made. Then Amazon, I guess, game subsidiary of Amazon, and then Microsoft and Sony, and then we have, I guess, Unity is the biggest one. So they have done 900 layoffs in terms of people, then Epic 830 and so on. So there's a lot of, like, it feels like a lot of these layoffs are like these huge companies that have this huge overhead, and there's just not a focus on the core business. You know, people can just sort of disappear into the walls and do some, I don't know, weird project that doesn't earn money. I'm not sure. Yeah, feels like times are changing.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's something related to like the bigger like world economy, that with inflation and everything, and there's just this post-corona something that's, I don't know.
True that. Maybe people start going out again, so they need less manpower. But one thing I was thinking now that you were talking was that we like to bash these companies for being evil corporate assholes. But if you think about it, all these examples we have talked about up until this point, they've laid off in total thousands of people that were clearly not needed to begin with. So maybe we should, I don't know. It's almost like they hire people to be kind. Well, we don't need to hire these people, but we do it anyway because we want to be kind and hire people and give people a salary and a purpose in life or whatever. But it turns out they did. I mean, it's sort of proof in the pudding now that they didn't need to hire all these people. Or maybe they did at the point, when they did hire them, and after the fact they realized they didn't need it. But I don't think they actually thought that they were trying to be kind to hire people. But there's another, it's a way of looking at it, because clearly they didn't need all these people, yet they hired them. But I do think maybe what you said about the pandemic and all that must have something to do with it. It feels like, that really just shook everything up. Jobs that we didn't knew existed all of a sudden did, and vice versa. Jobs that we thought were important weren't important, and so on. Not just in the gaming industry, but in like every industry, and so on. So it must have something to do with it. Because you would imagine that if you're that big company, you don't want to fire so many people that you can't run your business. So clearly they must have thought it through, or, you know, collected data on who they can fire and so on without losing customers and productivity and so on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel maybe it's also sort of a symptom that I think I've spoken about before, but that the IT industry in general is this very young industry. I mean, I don't think you would see in the, say, like construction business, or you wouldn't see in the maybe the automotive industry, so the cars and stuff, you wouldn't see people like researching, you know, have this huge, or maybe they do have like this huge sector of research and development, but at least I think there it's a lot more geared towards profit, and, you know, it feels like more mature industries where you know what you're supposed to be doing. But it feels like in like the games industry, for example, if you make a really cool game engine, then we just fill this void of where there's no competitors, and then you just grow really, really fast, and then you don't really know what you're doing. And eventually, my prediction is in 100 years, if anyone can fact check me on that, if I'm still alive, then, you know, the people will have like sort of matured, and like the really good companies that can really over a long term do something real and something good will survive, and there will be a lot less waste than there is now, because it feels like there's just so much in tech as well, that there's so much like waste, and like people make like products that do the same thing, but there's like four of them. Like one joke is about JavaScript frameworks, that you have like every month there's this new library that does this whatever thing, and there's always the same story that there's, oh well, this changes everything. And, you know, instead of just having like, for example, in, let's see, what example can I take? For example, building materials. You know, you have these like types of building materials, glass and concrete, for example, and steel. You know it works, so use it for everything, and then you improve upon that thing instead of just, you know, there's nobody coming up with, hey, should we build a house out of like papier-mâché or something like that? I don't know if that's a good analogy, but I guess you know what I mean.
It sort of reminds me of the crypto industry too. All these coins that revolutionized the world and all that. But
yeah, exactly. I mean, at some point there was like one big new one each and every month, but it feels like that also has to sort of die down, and then you can, with creative destruction, sort of find out which one is the, you know, worth saving or actually serves a purpose.
Yeah, I got a visual image in my head from this. I listened to at the gym today when I was warming up to get my pump on. Fatboy Slim, right here, right now, that one. And it's like the music video is really cool. It's about this evolution. So it starts like at year, I don't know how many million years back. And then it's like a fucking sperm in water, and it turns into a fish, and then it makes it up to land and turns into a monkey and eventually a human, and then like a quite cool guy, and then he gets fat, and then he sits down and he can't be arsed to walk anymore. It's sort of an evolution, this whole music video. So when you talked then about all these companies coming and going, I just got this image in my head, like survival for the fittest, but in the capitalist world, it's just everyone is trying, and I just try to reach for the stars, and they, so many fail, and there are just a few of them that succeed, and we'll see in the future who makes it and who don't. But at the same time, you don't want to have just one big ass company controlling everything. So it's good.
No, that's true. Yeah, I'm really glad that there are a lot of, you know, a lot of competition. One thing I really don't like about, like, the browser market, for example, is that there is really only two options in reality. So, you know, beneath the browser, you have sort of the core layer that does all of the thinking for the browser, and the rest of it is basically just UI and...
Oh, really?
And so on. Yeah. So, and there's only, what I would say, two realistic options on the market. The one thing is Firefox, and the other one is Chrome, because almost all other browsers are just a clone of Chrome, so it uses the exact same technology that Chrome does. Hmm. So if there's a bug in, or Chromium is like the underlying sort of project underneath Chrome. So if there is a bug on Chromium, that will affect all of the other browsers except Firefox.
Hmm.
So that's also something that I wish that there were a lot more options rather than just Firefox and Chromium clones.
But Firefox, I remember using that all the time in high school. Is that open source or?
Yeah, exactly. It's, I think, under the Mozilla license.
What about Brave? That's what I'm using now.
Yeah, so that's also a Chromium clone. So that's based on Chrome.
I see.
Essentially.
Maybe I should go back to good old Firefox.
Yeah, I'm just using it as a sort of a protest that, you know, keeping the one alternative alive. Because if Firefox is gone, then there's only one option for browsers. That, you know, and all of the websites is going to be made for only Chrome, and there's like zero chance that you could have more competitors in that area. And I think the same thing, as you say, with the game engines, I also want it to be, I mean, now there's a lot of options, but at least three sort of good options for making games, at least, which is Unreal and Unity and Godot, I guess. And there's also, I guess, what do you call it, the Source Engine, and there's a bunch of others, but I think three are the ones that indie developers use the most. And I hope, at least, that Unity does not go belly up and die off. Rather that, if anything, I would want more options so that you can have whichever options you want, depending on your needs and budget and so on. Yeah.
No, I agree. And I am downloading Firefox now. I'm going to try it out and see if it's... I want to go more open source. Just, you know, it's like when you become vegan for the first time, you don't fucking know what's meat or not. You know, I'm vegan, and you keep eating fish or whatever. It's like, well, you know, that's an animal. Ah, shit. Yeah, you're right. I suppose I'm not a vegan. And I keep talking about going open source, and I don't even know what I'm doing. But yeah, I did use Firefox growing up in high school and all that stuff. I just thought for some reason it was Windows. Maybe it's...
No, I don't think they... I think wasn't... I have to fact check myself on this, but I think wasn't like... No, that's another... I'm thinking... I was going to say that Firefox was called Netscape before, but that's not right. Because I know that... I think that Firefox outcompeted Netscape, which was like the more popular browser at the time.
Hmm.
And I think also at one time Internet Explorer was really big, and then Firefox was the one to sort of replace it, and then after that Chrome came in and replaced that, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, with that history lesson in browsers, what do you say? Do you have any more news?
Well, there is one, like, or a small anecdote I can do that there. It seems like Microsoft's acquisition of what they're called, Activision. Yeah, Activision and Blizzard is going through, and also I'm hearing rumors that Disney wants to purchase EA, which is Electronic Arts. So among the big ones, it feels like on that topic, it feels like there's fewer and fewer of them, like less options. But with the games industry, I'm feeling still optimistic. It doesn't matter to me, I think, if there's only one option, like Disney buys every game company there is, because anyone can, like at this time, like the tools are free and open source, and anyone can make a new game. I mean, remember that Minecraft, which is like one of the biggest games ever, was like this indie guy who just made a game and then it became big. So I think that anyone can do the same. I mean, Minecraft is a really good example that graphics doesn't really matter as much as gameplay, for example. So, yeah, I'm feeling optimistic. It doesn't really matter if, you know, the last Call of Duty game is made by Disney or
Microsoft. Yeah, but if it's Microsoft made by Disney, it would be a bunch of fucking transgender soldiers in the game. It's fucking bullshit, man. Where's my dwarves? Now it is a bunch of... You know how the conversation will go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, but, you know, that's the good thing about creative destruction and allowing anyone to make games, because you can just make your own game that's the way you want it to.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's...
See how easy it is.
And I think it sort of echoes back to what I said about the Unreal Engine. When too many games are made in it, people are going to get sick of it. And... let's say Disney owned every game company in the world. I think you would eventually feel Disney's influence, for better or worse, on the products themselves. And then eventually people would start voting with a wallet and go somewhere else. And somewhere else would be maybe hopefully a better experience or whatever. And like you said, while all of that happens, so it could actually be a really good thing if Disney owned everyone. But if that turned out to be a bad thing, as an example, Disney now, but you still have the Minecraft. What's his name? Marcus? No.
Marcus Notch. Something. Notch.
I know. You still have those guys that are doing what they're doing for. Because they're passionate about it. I like to see myself one of those people. It doesn't always land, of course, but you have the sort of profit-driven ones, and I think those games will always be great, and they are fun and all that stuff, but I think they will be milked to death, and I think that's the biggest problem I have with Disney. I heard someone say about, for example, Star Wars, like I said before in this episode, I don't really care about Star Wars, but someone said, like, all the stories in Star Wars have been told, and it was so much better before when they were left untouched. And I had that experience with The Last of Us. I think that they shouldn't have made a second game, or probably a third game now. I just thought that the first game was absolutely perfect, and it was almost like the second game ruined the first game for me, because it was just perfect.
Yeah, for that very reason, I've absolutely like left the second one alone and only played the first one. Because I don't want to like ruin the experience for me. Because I really, really love the first one so much.
I think that's a good choice. But that's the problem with us humans. We're curious. We want to see. We want to find out and all that stuff. And I feel for the Star Wars fans out there that they want to see all these stories, backstories and all that stuff. But I can also understand the ones who do see them and are left disappointed, because now they sort of ruined the mystery. of everything.
Yeah.
I don't remember where I started that rant, but...
Well, on like one of the last points here about curiosity. So that's one of the good things, I think, about if you compare the games industry to the browser market, for example. That, for example, with a browser, that if people are comfortable with it, like they are with Chrome, for example, then they're probably gonna use it until they die. But with games, like the form itself is a short form. So you're just gonna, even though it's gonna be, I mean, even World of Warcraft, people play that for a set amount of time, and then they want to try something else. So it doesn't matter if there's only one huge company. Like, people will want to try, like, small indie games either way, like, regardless of what they're playing usually. And eventually you always get sick of whatever game you're playing. You're not gonna find it funny or fun forever. Which is really nice, which makes me optimistic.
The only problem I see would be that games are... I'm thinking about Vampire Slayer or Vampire Spire Slayer, which is a former casino game designer who made that game. So he sort of brought the lessons from basically gambling into the Vampire Slayers. And it's a huge hit as a game, but the trick is that it managed to hit the gambling addict nerve in your brain. And what I fear is that we will be in a future where more and more profit-driven game companies, we all want to make profit, but let's say companies that are less passion-driven, that they will find a way to maximize that aspect of game design where you are just fucking hooked on the game and not necessarily enjoying it. That would be a scary future, and I hope we don't end up there. That combined with all these rants I do about we're not having patience anymore and we just want this, yeah. But anyway, otherwise, yeah, I see your optimistic point. I hope it's, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, I think, I guess, since we're over a bit over an hour, I guess we can call it a day for now, I guess. What do you say?
Yep.
All right. So I guess before we end the show, just a couple of shout outs. If there's anyone listening, we do have a comment section. So if anyone has any thoughts about what we've talked about, or if there's any specific guest that you would like to have us on, or anything you would like us to talk about, just let us know. And there's also a comment field in Spotify, actually. So I think beneath this episode, if you're listening on Spotify, there's a comment section. So if you wanna tell us anything, then let us know. And I think at the bottom of the description, there should also be a link to a voice message that you can leave us. Ooh. So that would be really fun. So if anyone wanna say anything to us, just let us know. That would be fun.
Yeah, try that out. You probably get on the show.
Yeah, probably. That would be fun to just play it for the first time on the show and just react to it or something like that.
Yes.
Cool. All right. So I think that's it for this episode. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Rune, so much for being my co-host, as always.
Thank you.
And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Hi.
Bye-bye.
Sayonara.